Welcome everyone to the Mail-In Wednesday. I know that usually sounds for a Friday, but after coming back from spring training and the beautiful weather that we were dealing with, me and Pop don't feel like really doing our best.
Hold on a second. Did you say beautiful weather?
It was. It was beautiful.
Why was it beautiful weather?
Because it was 30 every single day. It didn't rain. I got a tan. I didn't golf. But Joe Franchisi looks pretty good.
And more impressive than any of that is he didn't jinx us, because it actually was that great. So thank you for not jinxing us.
I did my best, Pop.
So on top for today, we're just going to talk a little bit about our adventures down in spring training. It was a first time for either of us, and we had some pretty good interviews. So, Joe, why don't we start off? Who did you interview, and what stuck out for you last week?
Well, I went through a couple players, but I think the one that stood out for me the most was interviewing one of Toronto's own, Marcus Knecht, with the Dunedin Blue Jays. He's had a bit of a storied career, I guess, in the minors. He came out with a lot of promise, and his career it's been a little bit tough for him. He has fantastic talent, but I think the key is he's a very, very well-rounded guy. Fantastic guy to talk to. Going into the interview, I was a little timid because, you know, he's a Toronto boy. He's playing for the Blue Jays. And growing up, you know, in the hockey hotbed, being a player that can be a part of the city's fabric and play for that team is just a fantastic opportunity. And I hope absolutely all the best for Marcus. And, you know, we had spoken a little bit about the outfield having their issues and whether or not it can help him move up in the organization. He was very open about it. He's a fantastic guy, very personable. But I do say, I think the thing I got the most out of him was just to get an idea of the type of human being he is. And I absolutely loved that. I thought he was a fantastic person. And what really touched base with me is when I asked him why baseball. And he just gave me a fantastic answer. A fantastic answer.
Oh, yeah, and I think you have a copy of that here.
I have it queued up. Let's listen.
Perfect.
What was it that drew you to it? Was it a player? Was it like a moment? Was it...
I think it was just... man. It was always baseball.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah.
It's just in the blood?
I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I loved hockey. I loved playing hockey, but it was baseball all the way.
Yeah.
I can't explain why, but I don't know.
I guess when it's in your blood, isn't it?
And that's something that I really enjoyed, only because we've spoken to so many people just in and around the city, from friends, from even any players we've talked to. I've dealt with a lot of hockey players, and I've always gotten the same answer. And I guess it's very nice to see somebody in baseball, especially from Canada and Toronto, to say that I don't know why. I just knew that every fiber in my being wanted to be a baseball player.
That's cool. That's
yeah,
cool.
Very, very cool. What about you? Do you have any great experiences? Me and Pop were separated a little bit for the week, so we're also catching up a little bit so you guys can listen to the talk.
And then that's why we enjoyed the sunshine a lot more, because we weren't in each other's company.
Yeah, pina coladas and not listening to Joe rant in the rain.
But for me, I think I touched on the same thing. Talking to these people, you find out, hey, they are people. I mean, we come from, you know, our upbringing of whatever nature, and we think anybody that's in sports, how prima donna they may be, and even for somebody that might be in the minor leagues and rookie level, single A, double A, you know, are they really, you know, going to make it in the majors? And, you know, what kind of, you know, do they consider themselves even a failure if they don't make it into the majors? And you realize that, you know what? They're going to try hard every day, regardless, and whatever happens, happens. And that takes a certain kind of somebody. The person that I was very fortunate enough to meet, another local Toronto boy, his name is Max Tissenbaum, and he has an interesting story.
Oh, really?
Even gets it? Yeah. 2009, got drafted by the Blue Jays.
That's always cool.
And he turned them down.
What?
He got drafted in the 40th round. And he felt, you know, he spoke with his parents and his sister and decided, you know what, you know, the best thing for him to do is to go to university, get an education, and then see what happens then. Fast forward, 3 years later, he gets drafted by the San Diego Padres in 2012 in the 11th or 12th round.
Yeah, big move up.
Big move up.
Yeah.
As a second baseman, shortstop. And then at the beginning of the 2014 season, He gets traded. This is like, I remember going, my God, like, I can get traded. Somebody even knows who I am.
Yeah.
But he got traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, and after the shock, realized that they've had a great record of bringing rookies up and so on and so forth. And that wasn't the end of the surprise. They turned to him and said, by the way, we think you have a better chance of making it to the majors being a catcher.
Really? So he went from shortstop.
More second baseman, but yeah.
Second base, shortstop type player to moving to being a catcher.
Correct. And already, you know, drafted by the Blue Jays and Padres and Tampa Bay Rays, like all in his resume.
Yeah, the guy's definitely moved around.
And he's only been 23.
Wow.
But his numbers, fielding percentage-wise, like 992 or something like that. He threw out 43% of his stolen people trying to steal against him. So, I mean, he's picking up really well. And I think a lot of that comes to his family. He has a sister, Molly Tissenbaum, who got into playing hockey, you know, like a typical Canadian.
Yeah, who would have thought a Canadian playing hockey, right?
Exactly. So she plays goalie. And I have no idea what goes on in that Tissenbaum family household, but she got a scholarship to Harvard. Harvard!
Wow, that is really cool.
So, I mean, it was phenomenal. And so I talked to Max about, you know, his time growing up, and he mentioned he had a little funny story about how his sister helped him train, and how he helped his sister train. So I brought this clip along with me.
We had an outdoor rink in our backyard a couple of years that I would go out, and it was just like a shooting pad with a net. And I'd go out there and shoot on her, and it got to the point where my mom was shooting at her, and we were doing a deflection drill. Just like you see a goalie in the regular game do, I got too close and she cracked me in the back of the leg. I'm not wearing my shin guards. What are you doing? Well, you said play at game speed. That was game speed.
Yeah, so as you can tell, there was no messing around that family. They helped each other out, but you play for keeps in that league.
Well, I feel kind of bad for him because where did he go to school? Did he go to like an Ivy League school or no?
He went to Stony Brook University.
Okay.
Which... you should see in terms of explaining how he actually got to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Again, another family decision. He had two Bristol boards with his mom. They had, you know, what's best for baseball on one side, what's best for academics on the other, and filtering everything out. It was a phenomenal process.
Well, I was going to say, I feel kind of bad for him because his sister's got the leg up at the Ivy League school, and then his sister probably has a way better butterfly than he does, and she probably definitely shuts the five hole down a lot quicker. So I think she's going to try and teach him how to be the dirt dog. Because, you know, shortstops can dive, but they're not going to get their body in front of a lot of things. They, you know, it's a little dangerous.
Well, no, that's why, like, ideally, you know, when I heard that he had actually switched positions to the catcher role, I wanted to get I had a really terrible week when it come to the camera and photography. For the life of me, couldn't get a great picture. But I had this one thing in my mind, and unfortunately it didn't come in. I was hoping to get him in his catcher's uniform with a baseball bat. But just pose like a hockey goalie would.
That would have been an excellent shot.
But that didn't work out. Maybe next time I run into him.
You know, funny about pictures, I was saying to Marcus when we were talking before, and he asked me, you know, how have you liked, you know, the sports journalism thing so far? And I said, honestly, like, I absolutely love it. It's something that I was really enjoying, but I told him the one thing I cannot stand is just taking pictures. And he said, oh, how come? And I'm like, I don't know. I kind of felt like I got up in your grill. I didn't really get to introduce myself to you. And then the first thing I do is you see this guy in a golf shirt taking pictures of you with a 300-millimeter lens. And for those of you that don't know, that is like the most stalker paparazzi looking lens you'll ever see. Like when it extends, you can hit a guy in the face from like half a mile away. And sorry for the American analogy, 500 meters. But...
it's uncomfortable for the photographer,
so
right?
So uncomfortable. Yep. And then so then he said to me, he goes, funny enough, Joe, I saw somebody on the sides and taking pictures. And I was like, oh, that's probably Joe. So I started showing off for the camera a little bit. So I hope I gave you some good pics. I'm like, absolutely you did. So that was cool, too. It was for something that I was really uncomfortable with. It was nice to know that he was a little bit more comfortable with it than I was.
Well, you had that experience. Here's my experience taking pictures. I was at the Blue Jays camp, and I was going to interview... hopefully a future first baseman for them, a gentleman by the name of Rowdy Tellez. And he was helping out the pitchers. Pitchers were practicing their bunting drills. So he was just a first baseman there. You know, pitchers would pretend to throw to home plate. They would bunt the ball. They would run to the ball. pick it up and
very
throw it to
routine.
First. Very routine. Mm-hmm. And if it just happens to get past the first baseman or past the pitcher, they also had a second baseman as part of this drill, and the second baseman would run in and pick it up and throw it.
Yeah.
So there I am standing inside the dugout, literally on the field.
Yeah.
Taking pictures of only the first baseman. Like, that doesn't tell anybody what I'm doing, right?
Right.
And so he still noticed, obviously, a corner of his eye, starts laughing. And all of a sudden, I'm focusing on him, and out of nowhere, a ball comes close to hitting me. And I kind of caught that the second baseman had run in. It went past the pitcher. Second baseman ran in, and he fielded it with his glove, not his hand, and he tried to flick it with his glove. But it went nowhere near the first baseman, more towards me. So I'm interviewing Rowdy afterwards, and Rowdy goes, yeah. I told him to throw the ball at you.
That's amazing.
Great. Thanks a lot,
that
buddy.
Is amazing. I almost got pegged at the Blue Jays practice facility in Dunedin. All I heard was the heads, and I look, and I didn't move, and I just kind of heard the ball kind of like right beside me, and I'm like, oh, my God, and I turned over, and there was a ball mark like 3 feet by me, but this guy had popped one up high. Like, I mean, that thing was skied and coming down like a meteor chunk right from my head. Luckily, it missed me, but...
Who was the Toronto reporter that got beaned in the head?
I don't know if it was in the head. I think it was in the leg or something. Was it Barry Davis?
I think it was Barry Davis, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Sorry, Barry, we're very sorry for throwing that one out there. You know, another funny story that happened to me, I have to say, if anybody ever takes in Detroit Tigers minor league camp, here's a heads up. The way it looks is that the ownership and the management saw a picture of a Detroit Tigers prospect wearing like the dry fit, a navy blue hat, navy blue shorts, same size socks and shoes, and then went copy paste, and 115 of them show up. I had lost my pitcher before I could take pictures of him, and I was run. Do you understand? I found Justin Verlander, but I did not find Austin Kubica. I looked everywhere for him. I spoke to almost every coach. And the only reason why I didn't speak to Jim Leland is because I don't even think it was there. It was probably one of the most hectic things I'd been through. But granted, it was a very fun experience to hang out there.
Well, I was fortunate enough to visit the Tigers organization in Lakeland as well. And a similar experience, when you have that many players there, very difficult, especially if you're a bit of a distance away at times, to figure out who they are to take pictures. But let me set this up for you. We had about 10 Cub reporters waiting for these players to come out to do our interviews with. And so standing outside their dugout there, and all of a sudden 5-6 players come up and they go to the right hand side, and we're 10 Cub reporters on the left hand side. I swear to you, it felt like I was back in my grade 8 senior dance, where the guys were on one side, girls on, and they had that awkward moment like, what do I do?
Did it get more awkward when you put your hand on his hips from like really far away and started slow dancing? Or
no,
cool
we didn't,
with that one?
We didn't get that kind of chemistry.
Smart move.
It's kind of bad when you go up and you see three players who are obviously from Latin America, and you're going, excuse me, are you Johan Pelissero? No, you, okay, thank you, hi.
Yeah.
And then realize that the person you're interviewing doesn't speak a word of English.
That's perfect.
Yeah, but it turned out to be all right in the end. He was a great interview.
Something I experienced that might have been a little different from you, because I'm pretty sure you had baseball the entire time, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yes, we'll get into what happened to me at the end of the week later.
Right. And then that day you were supposed to go to the track and field, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
So the one thing, I guess, even still with the... we were actually, like we were saying before we had left, we had the ability of being able to take in a couple events with the University of South Florida, which, very fantastic campus. I absolutely loved it.
I heard.
Beautiful. Beautiful campus. And most importantly, the people there were very, very, very nice people. Fantastic to deal with. The entire staff was very good. But anyways, I digress. My group actually ended up taking in the Valspar Championships practice round.
The golf?
Yeah, and it was really a beautiful course. I believe it's called Innisbrook. It was very, very, very nice to walk around that golf course and just think of all the places I'm not allowed to hit golf balls on. And we actually got lucky enough to have an have a press conference with the number one ranked amateur in golf, Oliver Schneiderjans.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the guy was For a young man, he's got a fantastic golf resume. In the last 15 rounds, he shot 13 of them under 70. So the guy puts up the 60s very quickly. And it was a pleasure to maybe speak to potentially the next Rory McIlroy, the next Jordan Spieth.
Well, I mean,
that was very, very cool. And after, I was able to actually speak to him one-on-one, which was pretty cool.
You look at it, and again, for our listeners out there, it sometimes becomes very difficult, since we're new to this role, we're new to this position, to hide our enthusiasm. And the magnitude of it is you sit there, and after you conduct your interview, you know, you take a second, you step back, and you go, Tiger Wood was a U.S. amateur champion.
Yeah.
Have I just spoken to the next Tiger Wood? I mean, not that it's impossible, but it's something of that magnitude, and it kind of gets in your crawl, in your headspace sometimes.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. It's definitely cool.
But yes, if we move on to my covering of the U.S. track and field, unfortunately, I was not able to attend. And this is where Pop's decrepit body comes into place. And I decided that instead of that, it would be more entertaining for me to spend, I don't know, about 8-9 hours at a hospital there. I'm okay.
Yeah, definitely not a fun time for Pop.
But I did get a decent interview with one of the nurses there who does jiu-jitsu and follows MMA, so it was quite an interesting discussion with her.
That's pretty solid. You find sports wherever you go.
Exactly. And I think when we look at it, you know, maybe it was Florida. You know, I mean, Davis got whacked with the ball. You know, I'm hit with something, and you know, I had to go to a hospital. And we weren't the only ones, were we?
It was a Toronto thing. Anybody that was a part of the GTA in some way, shape, or form needed to duck or trip or get out of the way, because it definitely wasn't something that was hitting everybody else. And if you guys haven't noticed, I think we're talking about a lot of the injuries that are befalling our Toronto Blue Jays, which are becoming more of the Toronto Infirmary Jays.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you get to the point where it's like, you know, what else is going to go wrong? You're afraid to say what else is going to go wrong because it just keeps happening. I mean, obviously, you know, it started off with Saunders, you know, a sprinkler, really? And I mean, it wasn't that he actually even tripped over the sprinkler. I think it was just that the area around the sprinkler was wet and soggy, and he hurt. And then it moved on to, were you there that day?
So listen to what happened to me.
Because I'm
not
blaming you.
I swear to you, I was not at the Blue Jays practice. I was at the Valspar, but we were sitting in the press conference.
It was group three. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was, so we're sitting at the press conference, and all of our phones all at once, you just hear the ding, and we look down, and it just says, Marcus Stroman, torn ACL, will miss the remainder of the season. And all of us just looked over and said, oh my God.
Did your hearts not sink?
You know what? I could not believe it for a couple seconds. I was like, there's no way. Like, there's no way that he tore his ACL. Why would he tear his ACL? Then I started reading. I'm like, it was on a bunting drill?
Yes, this is the very same ones that I was taking pictures of and covering. Yes.
Wow. But quick side note here. They were saying TFC is going with the same theme song that the Blue Jays went with the year that they traded for the Mets guys, and they absolutely played terrible. You remember when they made the trade with Miami and the Mets, and they went with the song Love Me Again?
Okay.
Right. That didn't go too well for the Jays. So hopefully TFC doesn't have the same thing happen because of the song. Now, the Jays right now, we don't know what their song is. Well, no one else does except for Pop and Joe.
Yeah. I think we kind of figured out what their song is now.
This is an exclusive from Pop and Joe. And you know, when we have an exclusive, there's no one's better.
You can book it.
Now let's listen to the 2015 Blue Jays anthem.
Ah! Ah!
think it's fitting.
Well,
just, I like it.
Just as annoying and long as that is, I mean, we haven't even gotten to the end of the Blue Jays injury list.
No.
Because what happens next? Pilar. Achoo.
Right. That's crazy.
And there goes his oblique muscle.
Well, it's funny, right? Because I was saying, speaking to Connect, I said, you know, the outfield issues. Literally the next day, Kevin Pillar goes down with a sneeze. And I was thinking to myself, oh, man, this could be very, you know, almost written
favorable
in the park. Favorable for the, you know, the conversation I was having. But at the same time, I kind of felt bad. It was almost like the karma I was sending over here to, like, have a bad, you know, a bad week while we were gone got sent over to Dunedin, and I kind of felt a little bit bad. But
well, I told you, I even for Stroman, I try to find a way to blame you for it.
It's definitely, I hope it's not my fault, but
it's not your fault.
It could have been.
But it's your karma.
It could be.
Could be your karma.
Yeah, you know, maybe I got what I wanted, and then I ruined the Blue Jay season.
That seems fitting.
That if anything makes sense in Toronto, it's that you can never blame the team, and it's usually the people outside of the team, like the media and the fans, that are the reason why they lose.
But here's what I don't get. And God, I love the city. We have a situation where going into spring training, we have question marks.
A lot of them.
A lot of them. I'm not going to talk the field. Let's just talk pitching.
Yeah, absolutely. Just starting?
We're not sure about who our fifth starter may be.
Yeah.
We're definitely not sure about the relief corps.
Right.
Stroman gets hurt. And throw in 15 expletives later. And I would take the point at this that, you know, like Chicklin, the sky's falling. Like it's over. It's
over for yeah. the Blue Jays. I believe, you know what? I had them peg third in the first place, so I didn't think anything of, like, I didn't think they'd be able to really do what a lot of other people were saying that the Blue Jays could potentially accomplish this year, but
hold on.
I kind of side with you.
Because what I'm hearing right now, what I'm reading about right now, and I swear I would love to have whatever Kool-Aid people are drinking, but now they're talking about, you know, it might not be that bad.
They're nuts.
That bad. It's like, do you realize how deep our young pitching is? It's young, yes.
Yeah.
But now they're talking, you know, throwing names like Castro, Osuna. Castro, like 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And the two of them yesterday against the Yankees, they held their own.
Yeah.
Against pretty much a starting lineup from the Yankees. And it's like, okay, fine for this year. But if, you know, you add them to Daniel Norris and Sanchez, and if Stroman comes back, they've got some arms. And
well, Stroman's gone.
Well, for this year, I'm talking about.
Right.
But I'm talking about, like, forget this year, but even sure. in the next 2-3 years, if these names come up and start producing like they can,
yeah,
we can have a heck of a rotation and young, which would be awesome.
I mean, I don't disagree there. What I would have hoped for was to
nobody
see...
nobody get hurt.
Yeah, well, that absolutely. But, I mean, I would have hoped to see the Blue Jays bullpen maybe be the stepping stone for these players, to see those guys like Sanchez and Osuna and the younger guys step in there at first, show what they got, and move up into the rotation. I mean, I was worried about having a number, you know, a second-year pitcher in a rotation and being, you know, looked at as a consistent talent. Now I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, so does Sanchez have a chance to crack this five? Is Norris really going to move up to four?
And is this better in the long run?
Right. And is it, but could it be, right? Like, that's the one worry I had, because I don't disagree that the Blue Jays, although their cupboards are not stocked as well as they would like, I believe their cupboards are well equipped to develop into potentially, you know, a glass menagerie. Old school reference. Pop, you like that?
I like that.
That's a good book. And it's not. I'm joking. But
liar.
Yeah, I know. It's my favorite. I have my own menagerie. When you think about the Blue Jays' injuries this year, does it not suck a little bit, though? Because, again, we're in one of those years where the Titans of baseball, they look terrible. Like, they look so bad, man. Like, when you really look at the Yankees and you really look at the Red Sox, you're sitting there thinking, you guys are lucky you have a lot of money. Because Pablo Sandoval looks very overweight. He looks like Poppin' Joe overweight. You know? And then you looked at the Yankees. Their biggest story out of spring training is that A-Rod can still hit a baseball.
And feel decently. Yep.
Right. CC Sabathia could potentially be done. I mean, he's still pitching, but he's not CC. And Baltimore's lost three key pieces. And, you know, Tampa looks... could. Some people think Tampa won't even be there in the long run.
Oh, especially after they lost Morgan and their manager's gone.
So, I guess that's probably what gives the Kool-Aid its sugar. But at the same time, it definitely sucks for a Toronto fan base when you look through the AL East and you're like, is this a new Titanic division? And are we the Titanic as well as the other four? And yeah, we'll see which Titanic can, you know, get the buckets out the fastest and get the water off.
And I don't know whether this is a Toronto thing or a Toronto fan thing. But I look at what you're saying and I see similarities very much to basketball and to the Raptors. Very excited watching them play. Obviously, they've had a great year. They haven't been playing well the last 2 months. Everybody knows that. They might not even reach 50 games, which everyone had thought was a foregone conclusion at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
They have to go, 10-5 now, the last 15 games to get to 50 games. It's still possible. But I look at this team, the Raptor team, and I go, they're not a championship team. They're not close to a championship team. I look at the Blue Jays and go, they're not a championship team. Are both of these playoff teams? Well, obviously the Raptors are. Blue Jays still have to be determined.
And what are the Leafs?
I wasn't going to bring them up at all.
Sorry. They're an OHL team. Continue.
If they're lucky.
Yeah, okay, AAA team.
But I look at both of these teams and I go, they at least look like they're progressing. Right. I like how the Blue Jays are going to look in a couple of years. I mentioned earlier with the starting pitching.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you have to develop from within to get to that. You can't, you know, buy free agents and so on and so forth. And so I like the idea of how their starting pitching is going to look like in a couple of years. I like it even more because you have somebody like a Russell Martin that's going to be with them for these next 3-4 years and be able to help them within the games. Sort of a trial by fire. I look at the Raptors, and again, this is where I don't know whether it's a Toronto thing or Toronto fan thing.
Yeah.
I get excited by how they might be in 2-3 years.
For sure. But, Pop, don't you see the one thing that it frustrates? I think this is what frustrates me the most about the Blue Jays, and I'd love to see what you think. When you look at the Raptors' core and the Raptors' development, it has one specific connection. It's young regardless. There's not one portion of the Raptors where you're like, ugh, I think this one or two piece might not be the same thing by the time the Raptors get to, you know, year three, when you're like, oh yeah, like let's go toe-to-toe with whoever wants to play us in the NBA, we can do it. But when I look at the Blue Jays, I think these guys are awesome. But Jose Bautista's in his 30s. Encarnacion is, I believe, like late 20s, maybe 30s. Russell Martin himself isn't young. You have Dickie's old. Sorry. I'm sorry. I felt so bad on that. RA, I'm really sorry. But you are.
Written apology coming out tomorrow.
Definitely. Definitely PR. But, and, you know, Burley's old. There's a lot of pieces that are there to help win now. But the pieces that will help in the future, I feel, won't have the pieces that are winning now then.
Oh.
Where, like, the Raptors, you'll have Lowry, you'll have DeRozan, you'll have Valanciunas.
See, this is where I disagree to a certain extent. And here's what I mean. When I look at the Blue Jays, I think, honestly, that you can find your offense anywhere. I think pitching is a lot harder to find than offense. And I think that's why you're going to have your solid group. When you look at the Raptors, 2-3 years from now, I don't know if I see DeRozan there. I don't know if I see Terrence Ross there. I know I don't see Amir Johnson there.
Sure.
Right?
Well, you know what? See, I do. I think he'll sign for a lower price to be a Raptor.
But if anything, he's going to come off the bench.
That's fine.
He's not going to be a starter.
I agree.
You know, and here's where the Kool-Aid part comes in.
Shoot.
You know, I think Caboclo has a very high ceiling.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with as much time development in 2 years' time, I think he can be a very, very good player. I know he said today that he's going to be a Minnesota player for a long, long time.
There's no way Andrew Wiggins is staying there past 3.5 years, 3 years.
I have belief that Wiggins is coming to Toronto. And again, I see a high potential ceiling there. And this is where I start getting excited.
Yeah.
You know, when you have wing players like that. Is Lowry around? I don't know how old Lowry is.
I believe Lowry is 29 or 30 himself.
I'm not even sure if Lowry's there.
28 or 29, yeah.
But I see Valanciunas there. And, you know, I see them picking up a four somewhere. And I'm going, wow. And now that's what gets me excited.
Yeah.
And I think the same with the Blue Jays. No, you're right. I mean, Batista's not going to be around for that, I don't think. And me it's neither. A shame because he's been good to Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy the way he plays. But, like I said, I don't think he's going to be around at that time. And my problem is, and the fear that I have, is that you can start making moves now to be that fantastic team in 2-3 years.
For the Jays, you're saying?
For the Jays.
Yeah.
But you can continually think that way. A lot of things still have to work out for that to happen.
Well,
right?
Let's look at, like, not, you know, not to get onto the ice cold, but I think Edmonton has had that mentality for the last 10, 15 years. I mean, it's constantly been, oh, yeah, this guy's good, but, nah, he's a little old. We can get a little younger, and then those younger guys, and so on and so forth, until at this point, they don't even want a number one pick.
No.
They're
no.
Like, I can't take this crap anymore. Just give me anybody. Give me a guy who's played 12, like, at least 500 games so that, you know, we can see what he is. But I was thinking, so Sam Mitchell.
It's always a bad part when you're thinking.
I know, and this is, you know, it's going somewhere interesting.
I smell the smoke.
So Sam Mitchell will be the coach, the special head coach tonight.
For tonight, yep.
For tonight's game. And Wiggins is coming back to Wiggins coming back to play in Toronto. And I remember something you were saying about Bill Belichick potentially having coerced his way into the headset systems to cause Seattle to call that stupid play.
Yes, I remember. I exposed that.
Right. Now, do you think that Masai Ujiri could be subtly, and I'm not trying to get the Raptors in trouble, again, Joe Nurse's thoughts don't necessarily ever mean much. Now, could Masai Ujiri have subtly told Sam Mitchell, let's tell him what Toronto is like, Sam. Give him a heads up. Just a little heads up. I will message you on my BlackBerry Passport that's 8 inches wide and only 3 inches high, doesn't fit in my pocket.
The new widescreen.
Right. And he will stay connected with the Toronto organization.
You're not getting any money for this, are you?
I'm not. Okay, no, okay. Absolutely. Well, while I'm holding my iPhone, BlackBerry does not like me. But you know what? Like, how funny is that? That you see Sam Mitchell, who won a Coach of the Year with the Toronto Raptors, who, if anybody could have arguably had the best, you know, time with the Raptors organization and with the most electrifying player that Toronto has seen since, I would maybe argue to say, a guy like Wendell Clark, Doug Gilmore, you know, not considering the goaltending, sitting beside Wiggins tonight as his coach. And you don't think he might look over to him and be like, kid, this could be cool.
Listen, forget Masai Ujiri. Any general manager will do anything they can, barring anything illegal.
Yeah.
Cough, cough.
Yeah.
To bring that much of a hometown talent to their city. Any GM would do that. And I don't have no problems, you know, with him talking to Sam, talking to whoever. You know, like I said, they can't have these conversations.
He does his
air quotations on it. But I'm sure, and I think Masai at one point had even said, yeah, he would like to have Wiggins. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, obviously Cleveland doesn't, but they have a different perspective on life right now.
Sure.
And look at the story in terms of LeBron going back. And, yeah, I think any GM in the Toronto Raptors organization would do whatever they could to have Andrew Wiggins come back. And I enjoy the fact that he's learning his craft for the first 2-3 seasons somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Sooner or later, you got to get to the big time. You got to choose where it is. I think I can definitely see Andrew Wiggins wearing whatever color jersey the Raptors are going to have because I don't know, apparently they're changing it again.
Yeah, we won't get into that. That's another sad day.
Yeah. So for me, probably the most exciting experience of spring training was watching my Philadelphia Eagles dismantle themselves and ruin a $320 jersey that I had of LeSean McCoy. And then go and get DeMarco Murray, who, by all means, I mean, he ran fantastically last year, but he's injury prone. And then seeing like Tim Tebow practice with the Eagles was absolutely the craziest thing I could have ever dealt with. I mean, honestly, Pop, I almost had a heart attack. And Dwayne, who if y'all remember,
Dwayne from Sports from the Six
was here, and we were talking about the Eagles too, and we were saying that, you know, we thought they were a solid unit. But when you look at the other things that have happened in the NFL, it's been a little bit of a surprising offseason. I mean, with the retirings of, you know, players in their 30s, like early 30s, early 20s, say, I want a life after this. I can't.
It has.
It's a little weird.
It's very weird in terms of the NFL. But I just want to go back to a couple of highlights that I had this past week.
Yeah.
One of the highlights, and I was going to bring up Dwayne as well. God, we just love picking on Dwayne.
Yeah, my
and
apologies.
Anybody from Sports in the
it's
Six.
It's his
really.
Birthday, actually.
It's his birthday.
It is
today.
His birthday. Happy birthday!
Shout out to Dwayne.
Shout out to Shania Dwayne Turner. It is his birthday today. So the next time you're on Sports from the Six, definitely give him a happy birthday message or comment. He will definitely be embarrassed.
And this one's out to you, Dwayne. I saw this tweet, okay, and I'm not sure how this person got this handle, but the handle was God.
Okay.
And the tweet went, I am God, and I'm not omniscient.
Okay.
But even I don't know what the hell the Eagles are doing.
No way. You saw that?
I saw that tweet.
Oh, my God.
I went, that's for you, Dwayne. That's for you. So that was one of my highlights.
Poor guy.
My other highlight of the week.
Thank God nobody gave me that one.
Is I had a picture taken with Mouse of the South, Jimmy Hart.
Yeah.
Shout out to Hogan's Beach. That's the bar that we stay. I mean, the bar of the hotel that we stayed at, because we were never in the bar.
It was the bar that we stayed at that was attached to a hotel we used to go to every now and then.
But he still looks young, man. He's got, as my friend best described, he's got aging cream like Dick Clark. Just the guy just doesn't age at all. So yeah. Shout out to him. But I don't know if people are making more of the 24-year-old San Francisco 49er retiring or not.
Yeah.
But it definitely is a story, and it's definitely something to look at. I think in terms of his decision, he was thinking about this for a while. I heard half a quote. I wish I heard the full quote. Couldn't catch the beginning of it. But apparently he tweeted something in January that, you know, some of the collisions that happen on the field, the speed and the impact is more than a bullet.
Yeah.
And you think about that, that would scare the bejeebas out of me too.
For sure.
You know? And we've seen some of the athletes that haven't aged well. We've seen others that have. I don't think you can begrudge him in any way.
No, absolutely not.
If he did this 20 years ago, 30 years ago, like in the
70s, it would be a totally different story.
Oh, he would be made a laughingstock. Oh,
absolutely.
And I'm glad that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
It's his decision. Let him, you know, be what he wants to. I don't know if this is going to pave the way for others to do the same.
It's tough. I mean, the one thing I will say for a player that can step away from the game like that is I know the money is a significant reason why most players will continue to play in the NFL and will batter and bruise themselves or in any contact sport. But there's also a drive and hunger and love of the game that most professionals do have. And I think that's what I commend the most, that somebody at my age, at 24, I would give a lot, and I've said this on multiple occasions, and I know I can be criticized for it, and I don't mind the criticism. I would be totally fine to get paid $1 million and be someone's goon and go out and scrap for the boys. And I know that it makes me sound archaic. I don't believe that it's the right thing for players to do. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, you know, you need...
That it's okay.
I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm just saying personally right now in my life, if you gave me the opportunity to lace up the skates for any 30 teams in the NHL, and I'm trying to be nice because I'm not trying to...
29 and a half?
It's more like 28. But any one of those teams, I would love to do that just because of being where it is in the NHL and the camaraderie and that type of family mentality you have there But good on him.
So let me ask you.
Yeah.
Would it be the same if you got paid $5 to do the same thing? So I'm trying to bring up, is it a money thing?
Yeah.
I mean, is it partly a money thing? Or is it the whole camaraderie thing as well? Because I understand where that's coming from.
Right. Well, you know what? I mean, I won't pretend to pay myself the complete and or complete oracle of the NFL, but I'll use the NHL as an analogy. When you watch games from, you know, the 60s and the 70s and the era of the Broad Street Bullies and even before
Lunch
that.
Lunch Pail Gang.
Right, yeah, the things that Maurice Richard dealt with, the things Boris Salming dealt with, any single time Wendell Clark was on the ice, you saw the emotion of those players, and they didn't get paid as much as people thought. I mean, a lot of players prior to, you know, the Wayne Gretzky, $2 million contract, weren't making that much money. The WHA, until then, people weren't making that much money. I think there is a belief that the big time ads has a luster to it, and that players will definitely go through it. However, I think the difference is back then, a guy used to say, man, my head hurts. And they used to be like, yep, drink a beer, have a cigarette.
You'll be better.
And you'll be all right. You know, take a Tylenol. Man up, essentially. But whereas now, I like that society has understood that they're not just something in a jersey. They're a human being.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have any thoughts on, like, potentially, like, if you had the chance, say, you know, Pop City said to you, right, like, right now you can be at the peak physical condition that you want to be at.
That's a stretch.
Well, yeah, to play in whichever sport you'd like to, but maintain it being a contact sport, but we're going to pay you league minimum. But you're going to have to tough it out. Would you do it because of the luster?
Hell yeah. Well, not even for the luster, just to be able to do it.
Right.
The one thing that I cannot stand about the NFL, and when we're talking about, you know, man-up sports or anything of that nature.
Right, there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. You know, rugby players, Australian rules players.
Ping pong players.
Would look at NFL players and go, you wear pads, yeah. Huh? You have a helmet, huh? And consider them, you know, unmanly in that regard. But what I hate about the NFL more than anything else, especially why I have no problems in terms of what this young man did,
mm-hmm.
Their contracts. It's only of the four or five major sports, the contracts aren't guaranteed.
Yeah, it's very tough. Their PA is very weak.
Like, if you get hurt, that's it?
Yeah.
Excuse me? You know, when you're getting into, you know, altercations and situations where you get hit as fast as a bullet has been described.
It's not fun.
And yeah, we'll pay you, but only if you play. Something's got to be done with that. I mean, right. Something has to. Well, now, you know, they signed a $42 million contract, of which $21 million is guaranteed. No, I'm sorry. You know, you pay me to put my life in my hands, then you guarantee the whole thing. So that's what I can't stand. And I heard an NFL doctor. I'm going to repeat that because it needs repeating.
An NFL doctor.
Said that riding a bike is more dangerous than a kid playing football.
He works for the NFL?
He works for the NFL, okay? So I'm not going to say that it's biased.
Yeah.
Or anything. He works for the NFL and says that riding a bike is more dangerous than... He may be right.
So I got a question for you.
It shouldn't come from an NFL doctor.
So I got a question from you. And this is something I can't comment on, so I would love to hear your opinion.
My sons will not play football.
But what if they were, like, what if they were literally the next Tom Brady? Like, if I could say to you, your son will be the next...
You don't even have to go that far. And I had a discussion with their mom.
Yeah.
About 1 year about them playing football. And I would not deny them the opportunity to play.
Yeah.
Would I be watching it closely? Yes, I would. One of the things that I feel very, very fortunate about in terms of, like I said, with their mom and myself is, you know, we tend to both be very involved in their extracurricular activities with school and so on and so forth. So,
for sure.
You know, we watch them play hockey. We watch them play basketball. We watch them play soccer all the time. It would be something that I would be involved with.
Right.
And following and watching. My sons love parkour right now.
Oh, so yeah, they're a dangerous bunch altogether.
So it's a dangerous.
So the padding is like an upgrade.
Exactly. And you know, it scares the life out of me. So would I stand in their way? You know, I talk big and say yes, they would never play football. But I wouldn't be able to stand in their way now. And if they're at the age where they're playing, you know, if they get a scholarship,
yeah,
I wouldn't be able to say no. You warn them and you hope. It's like life, right? You know, you try and prepare them as best you can for life, but ultimately, the decision is theirs and what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. So one decision I've been making is I want to wear shorts. It doesn't matter anymore. I don't care about the weather. I like shorts now. I'm back to them. What about you, since you're coming back? Like, I've retired my winter jacket.
I think that everybody else would argue that no.
Right.
You shouldn't wear shorts.
Sure, sure.
No, Joe, you shouldn't wear shorts.
Okay, okay. So I'm getting the
not about them.
I'm getting the no, Joe. Don't wear the shorts. Please, God, stop. Okay, I don't wear short shorts, so, but I wear shorts.
That was a 1970s commercial for Nair.
Yeah.
We wear short shorts. but you know what? Doing this podcast with you, not a problem, because there's a table there and I don't see it, so I don't care.
Well,
I'm being honest.
No, no, absolutely. I totally understand it. If I ever come in here with, like, skin-tight bike shorts, that is definitely when the Pop and Joe podcast is going to be tweeting something out that nobody wants to see.
Oh, there was actually, I saw a posting somewhere, like, should women wear yoga pants at work?
Not touching that.
Yeah, I know. Neither am I.
Not touching that.
But I thought I brought it up because I think that's one end of the spectrum.
Sure.
And you in shorts is the other end of the spectrum.
Right, right. So maybe I'll wear Under Armour tights to the next Pop and Joe podcast.
Sure, sure. I got blindfolds on. I don't have to look. I just have to talk.
Well, whether Joe's in shorts or Joe's in tights or Pop's on the field or Pop's on, I don't know where.
The hospital.
Or in the hospital. We'd like to thank you for listening to us mailing it in. And hopefully you'll decide to listen in the next time we decide to throw up the podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
Be good, boys.